Our next story is about eating locally. You know, the whole farm-to-table phenomenon, except this is more like tree-to-table. We're talking about acorns. Yes, there are people in Portland, Oregon, who are making the effort, and it is an effort, to make acorns a regular part of their diet. Here's Dina Pritchip to explain why.
At Laurelhurst Park in Portland, Oregon, the trees are just starting to turn fall colors. But the acorns are already dropping everywhere.
I mean, just with one grab, I can get two handfuls of acorns.
John Callis is a wild food expert who teaches classes on eating acorns.
So they sort of store up the energy, and some produce every 2 years, some produce every 3 years.
Even with that variability, Callis is able to fill up his bucket in a few minutes, which raises the question, why is he the only one out here? Acorns have protein, carbohydrates, fats, and minerals, all the good stuff. But they also have something else, tannins.
I'll tell you what, an acorn out of the shell is, ugh!
Tannins, as Pixie LaPlante is discovering, make fresh acorns puckery in a very unpleasant way. At John Callis's acorn workshop, LaPlante and others are learning how to process them. First, there's the shelling. Then you've got to grind them up.
That's a workout.
Then get rid of those tannins by leaching them out with water. It does take effort, but it's an effort people have made throughout history.
There's a lot of references in ancient Greek literature to acorn. There's some suggestion that at some of the earliest central settlements, there are unexplained pits which may have been for storage of acorn.
Bill Logan is an arborist in New York. He traced the history of eating acorns for his book about oak trees. And oak trees are almost everywhere.
All through North America, down into South America, then across the way into Europe and into temperate Russia and south. And then you go on out into China and then out into Southeast Asia.
But Logan says even though they're so widespread, there's a good reason you're not eating acorns.
I found the taste somewhat insipid.
For me, growing up eating acorns, it was always what you added to it. If it was nice grilled salmon, if it was huckleberries, if it's a little bit of seaweed.
Frank Lake comes from the Yurok and Karuk tribes. Native Americans are among the few who still eat acorns. For California tribes, the ground meal is usually made into a simple soup or flatbreads.
But because of the changes in forest management, and particularly acorn quality, it went from being a staple to then being more of kind of a specialty food.
Lake, who is also a research ecologist with the Forest Service, says the drop in tribal oak orchards is due to a few factors. Losing land, not burning off enough of the undergrowth to clear out pests, and favoring fast-growing timber trees over slow-growing oak.
I mean, you want to talk about a slow food movement? Adopt acorns as a main food source.
There are many places where oaks are thriving, or they've actually been planted, because of their nice picnic-friendly canopies. And there, Lake says, acorns can be a great untapped resource, as long as you leave some for the squirrels. For NPR News, I'm Dina Pritchip in Portland, Oregon.
Okay, let's talk now about major contributors to the tech sector of the economy, companies like Google or Microsoft or Domino's. Yeah, I said it, Domino's Pizza. Not an obvious choice, but still, as it turns out, a tech company. NPR's Elise Hugh explains.
All right, it's a quarter past 11, and I'm in a generous mood, so I'm going to buy some interns some pizza. This is Charles.
Hi.
And Nick.
Hi.
Both Charles Pulliam Moore and Nick De La Canal are ordering from Domino's Pizza, because lately, the company has gotten noticeably good at something that wasn't always its focus, developing technology products to get pizza to people more easily. It's Domino's VP Kelly Garcia's responsibility.
You know, innovation, coming up with the ideas is one side of the challenge, but then you actually have to be able to deliver it.
He's talking about delivering tech products. It's become the company's key ingredient for its recent success. Last quarter, its stock hit a record high, and its same-store sales have been climbing, while rivals Pizza Hut and Papa John's have stayed mostly flat.
This technology is difficult. It takes a lot of money, and it's complicated to put together. And so it just becomes a major differentiator for us when we look across the landscape of our competitors in quick service restaurants.
Domino's made its online ordering simple with pizza profiles, in which you can save your, quote, easy order. So repeat customers get their usual order in just a few clicks. And there's the pizza tracker.
Oh, wait, there's a little tracker. Oh, I'm just noticing this.
As intern Nick is just discovering, the tracker is a progress bar that updates customers on their pizza order in real time. Step one shows an order was placed. In a Domino's store, this is what happens on the employee's end once that order comes in.
That's the internet alarm. Like I said, alerting us that we just got an internet order.
Luke Page fields orders like this all day.
And we'll just look up, see that it's a large hand toss, grab our large dough, and make the pizza.
Back at Nick's desk, he's watching his pizza's progress.
And now there's a blinking number two that says it's being prepped. Oh, there's like an animation with a pizza guy. He's like moving down the counter. Oh, this is so cool.
The tracker follows each pizza all the way to the point it leaves the store. To keep up with more trends, Domino's is now betting on voice control. It just rolled out Domino's version of Apple's Siri. His name is Dom.
He's like your personal pizza assistant.
Intern Charles gives it a try.
Welcome back to Domino's. Will it be delivery or carry out today?
I will have a large pizza with onions.
Pizza added.
Domino's says ideas like the pizza tracker and Dom came about because the company's biggest single department is IT. Its management is staffed with digital futurists, and it's looking outside for ideas.
There's a lot of creative people out there that are outside our four walls. You know, what sort of ideas and how can we enable potentially more of that behavior?
One partnership with Ford moves Domino's into the world of connected cars. You can now order a pizza from inside the control panel of a Ford Sync.
I'm just really glad that we weren't slow to react to what were the emerging trends, both socially as well as with the ordering clients.
If you ask them, reacting quickly is a cultural orientation. The company has adopted a Silicon Valley-style, fail-fast approach to rolling out new products ever since it famously fessed up in 2009 to its bland, bad pizzas. It has since embraced its failures, even in its advertising.
You're going to make mistakes.
Have you ever heard of the cookie pizza?
I don't want to talk about it.
Over at NPR, we have lunch on our minds.
But here's Nick now. Your pizza's here.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Nicole.
How'd this process go?
Okay, so I definitely ordered a pizza with onions because I wanted to keep it simple. And the pizza that I got came with onions and olives, which I'm not upset about, but it's definitely not what I asked for.
Whoops.
Whoops.
The voice ordering app Dom must have heard him wrong. Even much lauded new technology has its glitches. Elise Hu, NPR News.
Tango. It's hot. Really hot. There may be no more passionate piece of music out there, in fact. And what you're hearing now isn't mere musical emotion. It's the musicians of the Danish Symphony Orchestra playing the Tango Jalousie. Right after every member, winds, strings, brass, tucked into a Carolina Reaper, the world's hottest pepper. Apparently, a man who goes by the name Chili Klaus and is a Danish chili pepper enthusiast convinced the orchestra to take his dare. Whatever the motivation, their bravery is unquestionable, as is their commitment to the music. Red-faced, coughing and breathless, they continued the tango to the very end. The chilies, or was it the beauty of the music, brought them all to tears. Of course, upon completion, they rushed off stage, probably to get a glass of milk.
And we've been reporting recently on cutting-edge technology in our food. And some of the most high-tech cooks are in the military. Army scientists have spent decades concocting meals that can last without refrigeration and survive the most extreme conditions like high-altitude airdrops. Well, now the Army is eyeing a new form of cooking. 3D printing. Yes, food fresh from the printer, or fresh as it can be. Here's NPR's Aarti Shahani.
Imagine soldiers who are strapped head to toe with sensors, sensors that measure if they're high or low in potassium or cholesterol.
We envision to have a 3D printer that is interfaced with the soldier, and that sensor can deliver information to the computer software.
Lauren Alexic is a food scientist at the Army's Natick Research Center.
And then they would be able to have either powdered or liquid matrices that are very nutrient dense that they have on demand that they can take and eat immediately to fill that need.
Liquid matrices that are nutrient dense, and you print them? You heard that right. The Army is turning to 3D printers for a nutrition project to stamp out the equivalent of power bars, but personalized for the battlefield. The Department of Defense has just approved research funding, and it's going to take a lot of research. While regular printers put ink on paper, 3D printers blast liquids and powders into complex shapes. But it's not clear if printers could mold a solid like carrots, and what would happen to the food's nutritional value.
There's synthetic types of meats, there's real beef, there's real meat, and we would see what that does in the printing process to that protein, whether it's animal-based or plant-based.
And of course, the 3D food will have to pass a taste test, just like the current rations, which are called MREs, meals ready to eat. Alexic mailed me a bunch that I'm now trying to pry open with my bare hands. I reach in for a jalapeno pepper jack patty and try it.
I like it. I like the flavor. It does taste very processed, like someone had to jam a lot into a little patty.
Well, it is thermally processed, so it's, you know, it is completely cooked.
Overcooked, even. The kitchens that make this patty use flaming hot ovens and extreme heat to sterilize it. Alexic says if the 3D printers could use less heat, the patty could also taste better, less like a compact muscle and more like fresh ground meat.
We hope so. You know, it's not being done, so it's something that we will investigate in our project.
In the food world, 3D printing is just getting started, and it's a sweet start, literally.
So can you kind of see, Arthi, that there are two beds here inside the printer?
Liz von Haslin is giving me an online tour of the Sugar Lab, a 3D printing outfit in Los Angeles that turns sugar into sweet candy sculptures for wedding cakes and fancy cocktails. The startup is sharing its technology with the military.
So basically what the printer does is a lot like making frosting in a bowl. It basically adds the wet ingredients of the frosting to the dry ingredients very, very precisely in very fine layers.
Von Haslin has sent me some samples to try, and they're very different from the military food. I unwrap a delicate sphere that's a little bigger than a lollipop. Reminds me of sweet tarts. Used to eat that when I was a kid.
Yes.
It's hard for me to imagine this technology producing anything nutritious or durable, but Von Haslin's co-founder and husband, Kyle, says the printer's ability to vary textures to make food soft or hard would be critical for soldiers who were injured or on the move.
Dialing in the exact density of food could mean that they could eat more easily, and because of that, as a consequence, they might even eat more or be healthier.
3D printed food sounds sci-fi, but according to military scientists and 3D experts, these meals for soldiers are on track to be ready by 2025. Arthi Shahani, NPR News, San Francisco.